podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this isn't obvious now. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, my name is Dave Kellner and this is the Punt Podcast here with William Hill. On this edition of the pod, we will speak to the Daily Mail's Northeast football correspondent, Craig Hope, and we'll talk to him about Rafa Benitez and whether Newcastle's tactics against Manchester City are killing the Premier League. Spoiler, they're not. Virgil van Dijk, is he worth £75 million? Does that even matter anymore? We'll also hear from Pete Farris, Gav Puchalski and Al Ross on the Football League, while Sam Norris gives his best bet in Europe. But first, to look at the TV games in the Premier League, it's Derek McGovern. Good morning to you, Derek.
Good morning, Dave. All well, I hope.
Very well. How are you doing, sir? Because I know throughout the course of the year, generally, when I text you saying, what time should we record the podcast? You always say 10 a.m, 10:30 a.m. But Christmas time, you were asked for a midday recording of the podcast.
Yes, been partying a little too hard recently. I mean, I'm at the age now where my back goes out normally more than I am. So it takes me about four days to recover from a few drinks. I'm useless, basically. I'm useless now.
It's good to have you with us, Derek. And standing in for Andy Excel on this edition of the podcast, it's a friend of the podcast, a regular contributor, Alex Dunn. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Dave.
Are you well?
I'm okay, yeah. I've not been partying at all.
You sound
actually
uncertain.
I've got a bit of a festive cold because I did my party in the week before Christmas, and now my body's going, ugh, what did you do that for? You've got to work now. But no, apart from that, dandy, fine and dandy, and looking forward to, well, I was going to say looking forward to this week's games. Who knows what day it is? Who knows when we've got games? But we've got a load coming up over the next 4 or 5 days, haven't we?
We have indeed. We've got two sets of fixtures to get stuck into. We're going to preview the three televised games on Christmas Eve and on the 30th of December and on New Year's Eve on this edition of the podcast. And we start with Manchester United versus Southampton, which is a 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. 4-11 Manchester United to win this game. The draw 19-5 with Southampton in the betting at 9-1. As ever, a whole host of enhanced odds available here with William Hill. Jesse Lingard, who's been the hero for Manchester United recently, him to score and Manchester United to win was 9-5. That's now 9-4. And if you think Paul Pogba is going to score any time, that was 21-10. That's been enhanced to 11-4. Derek, just what is Jose Mourinho talking about? Every single time you see a press conference, he's got some excuse about the way Manchester United are performing. And following that 2-2 draw against Burnley, he said they'd not spent enough money to compete, Derek. £300 million they've spent. They've got the richest ever midfield, the most expensive ever midfielder in Paul Pogba. They've got a £75 million striker in Romelu Lukaku. He's officially become a parody of himself, Jose Mourinho, Derek.
That's right. If you wanted to hire someone to make a clown of himself on every public utterance, well, you know, Mourinho is doing that right now. In fact, it's actually gone unreported that last week he bid £2 billion for the Premier League title. It's the only way he's going to get it. It's just they're absolutely useless. I mean, I watched Southampton on Boxing Day against Spurs, I think it was. So I couldn't possibly back them this weekend. But I've watched Man United all season, Dave, and I couldn't possibly back them any weekend the way they are. I think they've gone backwards under Mourinho, and that takes some doing when you realise the previous two managers were David Moyes and Louis van Gaal. I just can't have them with anybody's money right now. It's a 5:30 kick-off, this, but it might be a delayed kick-off time here because Saints will still be counting their Virgil van Dijk money by 5 o'clock on Saturday. Whether his departure will inspire and will give them a kick up the pants because he's been a little bit of a bad smell there. You don't know. They took a shellacking at the weekend against Tottenham, and also off the pitch as well. Some pundits were saying that the team aren't playing for the manager any longer. And certainly it looked like that in spells the weekend. But I don't think you've got to do anything much these days to take anything from Man United. I like both teams to score here because Man United don't keep clean sheets anymore. I like the look of that. But I'm actually going to go for Southampton with a goal start here because I just don't think Man United are up so much at all.
That's 2-1, Southampton plus one in the match. If you think both teams are going to score in this game, yes is available at 21-20. The good news for Manchester United here, Alex, is they are coming up against Southampton. And under Mauricio Pellegrino, they've won just four of their 20 games in the Premier League, which is scant return, given they have some quality in that side. And that's why they are 9-1 to win this game away at United.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? Because Derek often goes on this podcast about how Southampton are always too short. And for once, they're not. I still don't want to back them. But look, they've been ranked this season. They yeah. really have. They're not... with a lot of sides who are down there, at least you know what their aim is, if you like. There's teams that go out with certain game plans. With Southampton, it just appears to just sort of go out there. If you... It's like Pellegrino says, right, 6 out of 10 from all of you today. And they go, yes, boss, consistently. Charlie Austin's the only one who's threatened to hit maybe a 7. And, of course, he's unavailable here. So it's difficult to get away from Man United, even though, I mean, you call Jesse Lingard the saviour. If the saviour is drawing 2 all at home to Burnley, if he's rescuing you from that, then he doesn't have to be that special, does he, really? I think that Man U will win. But Southampton do nothing for me at all. Their away record is really poor. Their record, full stop, is really poor. Just one win in 11 so far in the last 11 games in the league, and that was against Everton at a time when they were shocking as well. So I just can't make a pro Southampton bet, I'm afraid. So I'd go a little bit against Derek. I'd say Man U and unders would be the play for me. So I do think they will keep a clean sheet, but I don't think they'll knock Southampton for well, we saw obviously conceding 5 in. Against Spurs on Boxing Day. I think Southampton will come out and maybe be a bit more defensive, try and nick a point. I don't think they'll get one. 1-0 or 2-0 to Man U for me.
At Manchester United to win and under 2.5 goals in the game is available at 12-5. Just playing devil's advocate as far as Mourinho's concerned, Alex, for a second. Pep Guardiola did come in and inherit top class, world class players in Sergio Aguero, Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva. Mourinho's had to maybe work a little bit harder. And that is giving Mourinho a slight bit of credit.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that Guardiola also had a lot of muck to clear out at Man City. Now, I'm not saying, oh, well done, Pep. You've done really well there in selling, you know, your ageing fullbacks, etc., etc. But I take on board that Man U didn't have any world-class players. Do they now, though? They've got one, which is Pogba. Is anyone else genuinely world-class in that side?
I don't think so. Do you think, Derek, that Mourinho lasts next season? Do you think he's there at the start of next season?
Well, I hope he is. No, I don't. I don't think he will be there. I just can't believe the Man United fans aren't kicking up more of a fuss than they already are. I suppose by the time they've gone all the way home to Bangkok, it's difficult to muster up the enthusiasm. It's just shocking what they've been forced to watch. This is a team who under Fergie were, you know, the Cavaliers for 20 odd years, and now they're just unwatchable. He couldn't have done a worse job at Man United than Mourinho's done. I know people are going to say, well, they're in second place, but they ain't going to finish there. This is a poor side with a manager who's a busted flush.
On paper, it's a mid-season, mid-table encounter that hardly whets the appetite, but Bologna versus Udinese may provide the standout bet on the continent this week. They currently lie 9th and 12th in the league table, level on points with 24 gains so far. Udinese have a superior goal difference and a game in hand, but ultimately these pair are very evenly matched on league standings alone. But the outright prices have failed to take into account the fact that Udinese are riding on the crest of a serious wave at present and really have no business in being 21-10. They lead the form table in Serie A, having accumulated 15 points from their last six games. They've only been beaten twice in their last eight in all competitions, and both of those defeats were narrow ones, and both came at the hands of table-topping Napoli, which is excusable. They've won all their other games in this period, and have only shipped one goal now in their last four league matches. Meanwhile, Bologna's recent form is decidedly indifferent, and their home form is actually bordering on poor. It's just two home wins all season for the hosts, and I think Udinese can take advantage of that, and I make them the Nap selection this week at 21-10.
On to the other Manchester club. We've got Crystal Palace taking on Manchester City. This is midday on New Year's Eve. Palace are 12-1 to win it. The draw 5-1 with Manchester City 1-4. Enhanced odds, Sergio Aguero and Raheem Sterling both to score. That was 19-10. That's been boosted to 5-2. And Man City to score over three goals in the game was 23-10. That's been enhanced to 11-4, if you fancy that. And given that Manchester City have won their last two games against Palace 5-0, maybe that could look attractive. And a win for Manchester City in this match will see them equal the record winning run in one of Europe's top five leagues. Bayern Munich, managed by Pep Guardiola, they won 19 consecutively in the 2013-2014 season. But Palace have definitely turned the corner under Roy Hodgson. He talked positively about his team's performance despite the loss on Thursday night against Arsenal. And Wilfried Zaha has definitely been a shining light, a beacon of hope for Crystal Palace in recent weeks, Alex.
He has. He's been really good. And he was playing in a role that wasn't that familiar with him when he had to play up front. And then Benteke's come in. And although Benteke hasn't really been setting the world alight, Zaha's managed to just find a little bit more room with him bustling defenders up. I really like Zaha to score any time here at 3-1. I mean, you talk about Man City, they're 4s on. They're the same price as they were against Newcastle in midweek. And it's just, how do Palace get at them? Now, interestingly, Palace have scored in their last seven home games exactly two goals in all seven. Mm. If you think that's going to continue, you're going to get a very generous price about it. I don't think it is going to continue, but what I would say is, in all of those games, both teams have scored, and I think that could happen this time. I can see Palace scoring. That's pretty much all I can see them doing. I think Man City will probably have too much. But it's hard to find a pro Man City bet at the prices, because they're 4s on and you think, well, unless you're having it in an acca, then you don't really want to touch that. And then you look at the anytime goalscorer prices and they're all pretty short. And right now, as we record this, we don't know exactly who'll be starting, because you'd imagine he'll rotate a bit. Sane didn't play against Newcastle. He's 23-20 anytime. That might be fair. But my only concern for Man City is Kevin De Bruyne is going to have a rest eventually. When he does, are they going to struggle? And I use struggle in the lightest possible sense, because they'll replace him with another fully-fledged international, you know, who's going to do a great job anyway. But De Bruyne is the heartbeat of that team. Everything goes through him. If they were to rest him, and I'd imagine they will try and get a rest into him either for this game or the game on New Year's Day, on the day after New Year's Day, sorry, for Man City, isn't it?
Yeah.
That would be just a slight concern for me. So I'd wait on team news. If De Bruyne doesn't play, I'd be half tempted to take Man City on for win purposes, but that's pretty much the only light I could get. But for a bet here, I'd go Zaha anytime. I think 3-1's more than fair, and both teams to score, for me, well, the stats say it's banker material. I wouldn't go that far, but you're going to get a kind enough price.
8-11 it is for both teams to score in the game. If you do think Palace are going to score more than once in this match, that's available at 18-5. Palace over 1.5 goals in the game. Interesting thoughts about Kevin De Bruyne there from Alex as well, because Guardiola said after the game they won against Newcastle the other night that De Bruyne wasn't fully fit and he'd been suffering with illness. Maybe he is due a rest, Derek.
Yeah, possibly. He's been on the go all season, but he makes it look easy, doesn't he?
He does,
you know,
yeah.
And he makes the right decisions all the time. You know, he's tremendous. He's a much better player than I've ever given him credit for, watching him over the last, 6 months or so. He's fantastic, and to be in that team who are breaking all kinds of records and stand out like he does, well, you know, it makes you wonder how good he is, and makes you wonder what on earth Jose Mourinho was doing when he sold him at Chelsea a few seasons ago. Yet another cock-up by the special one there. Talking about managers, you've got here Pep Guardiola against Roy Hodgson. You've got one who spent all season taking plaudits, the other one who spent all season taking naps. Jesus, I mean, Hodgson's first car was a covered wagon. That's how old he is. I mean, I can't believe he's still a manager in the Premier League, especially given the cock-ups he's made of his recent jobs. You know, when a drug test has come unannounced for urine samples of the players, you know, after games, well, Hodgson gives one too, but not deliberately. It's just, I can't have him. And you're saying that he's helped Palace turn a corner. I disagree. They're still in deep doo-doo. And you look at the players they've got there. Saha, who, you know, if he didn't choose the Ivory Coast, would be on the plane with England to Russia. Townsend, who was a shining star for England a couple of seasons ago. Loftus-Cheek, who, you know, in most recent internationals, everybody was talking about him. Benteke, centre-forward, one of the top-rated countries in Europe or in the world. You know, I could take over Palace and keep them up. He's done nothing in my eyes, Hodgson. Absolutely nothing. You know, City are 1-4. Everything Alex says about City 1-4, you know, it's not, they should win, shouldn't they? They've been beating everybody, and Palace is a lot easier task than most they've met. But I agree, I do see Palace scoring, because I watched them against Arsenal the other night, and they do carry a real threat going forward because of those players I've just said. They're too good for Palace, basically. So, yeah, I'll go both teams to score. My only worry there is that it's a little bit short. And when you said 8-11, I gulped a little bit. I thought 10-11 would be the shortest it would be. But City will win, obviously.
Man City to win and both teams to score in the match could be an option as well. That's 8-5, City to win the game and both teams to score.
That's the way.
Yeah, what I would say as well is, if De Bruyne is rested, you might look at Yaya Toure to come in. Now, he's actually an all right price. He's 17-5 any time, and this is very much an if. He's got a phenomenal record at Selhurst Park. I think it's 4-5, I think.
Right.
Something like that. So just if they do try and get a rest into him, then that may be the way to go.
The last of the televised fixtures in this set is West Brom versus Arsenal. This is 4:30 kickoff New Year's Eve. West Brom are 4-1 to win the game. The draw 3-1 with Arsenal 7-10. Enhanced odds, Arsenal to win both halves was 11-4. That's been enhanced to 100-30. And if you think both teams are going to score in the first half, that was 15-4. That's been enhanced to 9-2. Derek, it's little surprise that Mesut Ozil and now Alexis Sanchez are starting to find their best form this close to the, well, we're right in the January transfer window now, Derek, and Sanchez and Ozil starting to turn it on. Sanchez in particular, he's some kind of man, isn't he? He knows that there's a big bumper contract coming his way, and he's just immediately started to perform.
He's a class player, Sanchez. I mean, you know, I'm not sure he's turned it on for much of the season for Arsenal, but his timing, yep, you're right, is spot on. Ozil is another kettle of fish. I don't see him coming back to form, because I don't think he's got any form to come back to. It's just one of the myths of football, Mesut Ozil. No one will convince me otherwise. As for West Brom, well, they're not as bad as everyone says, you know. Salaman Undone, on the other hand, Dave, your favourite striker. What was he playing at the other night? Jeez. You know, West Brom, I've been looking at West Brom. I know they're in relegation territory, but they've drawn with Tottenham this season. They've run Manchester City close twice, once in the League Cup, and they've drawn with Liverpool. You know, they're tidy results. They've lost only 3 of their 10 home games this season, and they were to Chelsea, City and United. You know, so this is not a gift for Arsenal. The odds on, there's no way will I be touching that. Last season, this fixture finished 3-1 for the Baggies. The previous season, it was 2-1 for the Baggies. In recent weeks, Arsenal failed to win at Southampton, failed to win at Watford. I couldn't touch them, our odds on Arsenal. I'm not going to go for West Brom either, because they don't win enough games, but this looks to me a nailed-on draw, and it's just gone out from 11-4 to 3-1. Mm-hmm. That's a big price, that. Big, big price.
I'm not having it. I think West Brom are the worst team in this league.
They outclassed Everton, you know, on Boxing Day. Okay, that's no great feat. But if they'd have won 2 or 3-0 that game, no one would have argued.
They've got a manager that you know all about, Alex, being a Newcastle fan. Alan Pardew's come in, and we've mentioned this on the podcast before, that when Alan Pardew comes into a club, he has success in the first 3 or 4 months, and then that success tails off and he gets sacked. This time he's come in and not had that success. I mean, they had 2 good results earlier on in the season where they won. Since then, they've played 18 matches. They've lost 9 and drawn 9. They've not got a win since August.
First day of the season, they beat Bournemouth, then they went to Burnley and won, and then they beat Accrington in the Cup. And since then, not a single win. I'm sorry. I will say they're not the worst team in the league. They're not. Because Swansea are something else. But they are pushing them close. And with Pardew in charge, I cannot see them getting out of this mess. The thing is, Pardew, he would tell you that he's a motivator. That's what he does. Because, let's face it, he's no tactician. He would be... That's sort of the way that he'd get to his players. So if they ever are going to be up for a game, it will be a game like this where Arsenal with a bit of a soft centre, you would try and get at them. But I just can't see how West Brom are going to trouble them, because who've they got to actually do anything? You're going to say Rondon, Dave, because that's what you always do. But
I've stopped beating that drum.
But
now,
you just look at the goalscorer markets. There's just no one. The centre backs are the way that you'd go if you're looking for a bet,
yeah,
for a pro West Brom bet, because they're big prices. You know, Hegazi, Evans, and the like are double figure prices. But I just think Arsenal will win this, and I don't like backing Arsenal odds on away from home because they can be a bit soft at times. But I think they'll win this 2-0. Probably 1 or 2-0. I don't think they'll go crazy, but look, it's when you look at the anytime goalscorer prices, you look at the wealth of forward talent that Arsenal have. I think that they'll sneak past West Brom here. Granted, the price isn't massively appealing, but Arsenal to win an under 2.5 goals is 3-1, and that'll do for me.
You wait all year for a clean sweep of Naps, and finally, just before the end of 2017, it happens. Well done, Dave Kalner, Gav Puchalowski, Derek McGovern, Al Ross, Andy XL, Pete Farris, and the Euro Boys. Oh, they didn't. Oh, just one winner. Two winners. No, sorry, they gave me the wrong information. It's pretty much as bad as it always has been. Happy New Year, everyone. Hopefully, 2018 is the year of the winning Naps.
Alex, you've got a standout Nap for us this week.
I do.
You've got to pinch mine. I've got to pinch mine, I know it.
Well, go on, Derek. No, go on, Derek. I will let you go first, because I have a backup. You sure?
Oh, do you? I haven't got a backup.
Go on, then. You go first.
You know what it's going to be? Burnley, 12-5 to win at Huddersfield. Just massively, massively overpriced, that one.
You know what? I was going with that. I fancied Burnley strongly, so yeah. I'm scratching around now for which is frustrating, annoying. It is a big price, that Burnley to win at Huddersfield at 12-5. We know you're going to oppose Huddersfield until you are 6 feet under, though, Derek, aren't you, this season?
You know what? I looked at this fixture. I'm looking ahead to the fixture. I thought, I can't wait for that game to come up, because Burnley's going to be a bigger price than they should be. And I thought, well, I'll be lucky. It's 7-4. I'll be made up. 12-5. I can't believe.
Alex,
he's not nicked mine, but it's good. Similar logic. How are Leicester 8-1 at Anfield?
Yeah.
How is that possible? They will score in this game at least one. If they do, they cannot be that price. So I don't know whether to nap Leicester plus a goal at 5-2, which is sensational, or Leicester plus two goals, which is really sensible at 10-11. I think I'll go plus a goal. So Leicester or the draw should not be anywhere near 5-2. They play with such pace on the break. We know that Liverpool can't defend anyway. I'm not saying that Liverpool won't score a couple, because they probably will. But Leicester are ludicrously priced as far as I'm concerned.
I'm going for the one that looks like a stick-on draw as far as I'm concerned. That's Bournemouth at home against Everton. I think Everton will be happy to go there and get a point. And that's 11-5. So the Nap treble this week: Burnley at 12-5, Leicester plus one at 5-2, and Bournemouth and Everton to finish all square at 11-5. And that pays just over 37-1.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now it's a delight to welcome the Daily Mail's Northeast football correspondent Craig Hope onto the podcast. Joins myself and Derek to discuss a couple of topics this week, a couple of interesting topics as well. First of all, a warm welcome to Craig. Good afternoon to you, Craig.
Beneath about 6 inches of snow, so I appreciate the thoughts.
it's snowing down here in Leeds actually as well at the moment. Craig, let's talk about Newcastle, because obviously being the Northeast football correspondent, mm-hmm. you get to cover and see Newcastle on a regular basis, and I don't know if you heard Gary Neville's comments about the game the other night against Manchester City, but he eviscerated Rafa Benitez and his tactics in that match and said that if teams continue to play like this against the top clubs, it's going to kill the Premier League. I thought his words were very harsh, and I thought they were unwarranted as well, actually, Craig.
No, I agree, and I think Gary Neville's comments coupled with Jamie Carragher's comments in the studio made headlines and have been a real debating point this week, which is good, which we welcome, of course. But I think it was an overreaction to the first half performance. Now, I was there covering the game for the Daily Mail, and that first half performance was surreal. At half-time, Jamie Carragher's comments were played out in the press room. I was stood there watching, and I've got to be honest, I was in full agreement. I really was. I thought, you know what? What is the point in turning up if you're a follower of Newcastle or even watching the game as a neutral? There was no interest. It really was training ground stuff. And one of my colleagues said, yeah, but it's good to see Manchester City, isn't it? I said, well, no, it's not, actually. I said, Manchester City aren't being pressed here. They're not being tested. We're not seeing the real Manchester City. What you want to see is City's fabulous players picking teams off when they're in a real contest, not going through the motions of what in effect was pretty much a shadow exercise. So at half time when Jamie Carragher said that, I thought, you know what, you're right there. But then as the game transpired, my opinion changed, and the reason it did was because Newcastle United came within a lick of paint, a dodgy refereeing call, a deflection, one shot or whatever of taking a point, and that's closer than the previous 17 teams have come to take anything off Manchester City. So in the isolation of Wednesday night, I think Rafa Benitez was 100% justified. It very nearly worked. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't great to watch for the first hour. But the last 30 minutes, I thought they were exciting. I genuinely thought I was in a football match where the fans were up for it. City looked nervous. They looked rattled at times. And credit to Rafa Benitez for creating that scenario whereby he did come so mightily close to taking a point off City. One thing I will say is, in relation to Jamie Carragher's comments, now, if you flip the game on its head and Newcastle have a go for the first 20 minutes, would Jamie Carragher then be happy? But then, of course, Newcastle could go out and get big 3 or 4-0. So I think Rafa was justified in a strange sort of way. I enjoyed the last half hour, but I certainly saw where the guys are coming from with their comments at half-time.
As a whole for Newcastle, Craig, at the moment, they've lost 5 straight matches at home now. That's their worst run for over 60 years. Is Rafael Benitez given too easier ride?
No, he's not. And I wrote a piece on this earlier in the week. Now, it's their worst home run since 1953. How many managers would survive a 64, 65, whatever it is, breaking a 65-year-old record with 5 straight home defeats? I don't think many managers would. Rafa Benitez will. Now, at the game on Wednesday night, there wasn't one call for him to go, not one dissenting voice. And certainly in the past few weeks, I've only heard one guy actually speak up against Rafa near the press box, and he was very quickly shouted down again. And the reason being is, when you cover the club on a day-to-day basis, as I do, when supporters who follow the club, they appreciate the bigger picture here. Now, Rafa Benitez has been so badly let down by Mike Ashley, and more importantly than that, he's actually had the courage to come out and say something against him. Now, the previous boss, Steve McLaren, and his staff, they would be issued with written warnings if they dare to speak out on transfer policy, rightly or wrongly, whatever you think of that. But Rafa has. He's called Mike Ashley to account. Don't forget, Newcastle are lucky to have a manager of the calibre of Rafa Benitez. He came at the end of McLaren's first season. He was unlucky to take them down. They were 6 unbeaten, but he crucially stayed and he got them out of the championship. Now, look at the two teams that are relegated with that year, Norwich and Aston Villa, who I think are currently 9th and 16th in the championship. So it was no mean feat getting them up the first time of asking last year. But what he didn't get was he didn't get the backing in the transfer market, which he both needed and deserved as well. He was given £35 million and you see, it's been evidenced by what's played out on the pitch that what he could build with that was just a slight improvement on a championship squad, really. And it's no surprise to see them struggling. But no, to answer your question, Dave, no, Rafa shouldn't be under pressure. He's not under pressure. And of course, to the backdrop of all of this, we've got the potential takeover. And one of the terms of that is that Rafa remains in charge. So even if Mike Ashley did want to fire him, he probably wouldn't.
And we've got Rafa Benitez's biggest fan on the podcast with us as well, Derek McGovern. We've heard throughout the season how you admire Rafa Benitez and him as a manager, and he has clearly been let down, as Craig says, by Mike Ashley.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Manchester City team that played out at Newcastle, they pay about £50 million per position. Newcastle about 50p. I mean, that's the difference. I mean, and they were in the game until the last few minutes. They had the chance. And Gary Neville's comments make me laugh. I mean, given his time again, how should his Valencia team have played against Barcelona at that time when they got stuffed 7-0? Well, it was Valencia, the team Rafa won the Spanish League with, by the way. Anything Gary Neville says, you can take with a pinch of salt. And yet, it does stick in the craw a little bit that they played at home like that. But I can't think of what else he was supposed to do. You know, what are you supposed to do? Come out and play against City and get walloped 8-0? Like, Bournemouth took a stick for coming out against and trying to outplay Liverpool a few weeks ago. They also took a hammering. That's what happens. I've got a theory, it might be pie in the sky, but when teams, you're hinting, Dave, that the Premier League is being ruined by teams, even at home, parking the bus. But let's not forget Man United did that at home to Man City, by the way. I've got a theory why they're doing it more often now. A, there's this big gap between the crap teams and the best teams, and that gap is getting bigger, so there's one reason. But when you're in the game at 0-0 with 72 minutes gone, and you're not looking like mustering an attack, but you can get an easy pen now nowadays. You just welly the ball against the defender's arm, and a daft referee will give a penalty for it. It's easier to get a penalty than it ever has been, and so there's mileage in defending on block and just hoping that a daft referee will, when the fans shout handball, you never used to get pens for that. Now you're getting about a million a season for it. So that's my theory. It's probably pie in the sky, but I'm sticking with it.
And I think, Craig, the assertion was on the Sky Sports coverage that the teams at the bottom were doing this against all the teams at the top. I don't think that's the case. I think they're doing it against one team, and that's Manchester City, because this City team are so good and so different from everything we've seen in the Premier League before.
Yeah, it was an overreaction to 145 minutes, which was pretty sort of dispiriting and disheartening, I must admit. But listen, Chelsea are the champions. They've lost where they've lost at Palace and West Ham this season. Arsenal are no mugs. They've lost at Stoke and Watford and were pushed all the way by Crystal Palace last night. So Newcastle, don't forget, went 1-0 up at Manchester United and Chelsea in December. So they went out and had a go then. It's against Manchester City. And the one thing I will agree with is that when I saw the team sheet an hour before kickoff, I looked at it and I thought, has it really come to this? It used to be the case that the best team in the country had to raise their game every week, and it was the old cliche, wasn't it? Because it's everybody else's cup final. When you play Manchester United, it's everyone else's cup final, so they've got to raise their game another 10% to combat that. Well, now against the very best team, which of course is Manchester City, clubs are resting players. It's no longer, you no longer play your FA Cup final side, you play your Cabaret Cup third round team. And that, for me, if you look at France as well, what happens with PSG, you'll often find teams play weekend 11s against PSG because they know they can't win, and they'll save the players for a winnable game next week or in the midweek. So that is the one concern to me. If Manchester City, not only are they far better than everybody else, but if they're going to go to going to be playing against weakened teams every week, well, that then becomes a little bit of a joke, doesn't it?
Let's talk about Virgil van Dijk and the signing Liverpool have made in this January transfer window. £75 million, Derek, for Virgil van Dijk. It seems like a major coup for Liverpool and for Jurgen Klopp to steal him away from Manchester City, if the reports were that City were interested in van Dijk. He's clearly going to upgrade that Liverpool defence, Derek.
Well, yeah, Dick van Dijk would. I mean, if they're paying that much for him, I can only assume he can play in goal too, because we need a goalie as well. £75 million is an awful lot of money for a defender. I mean, everyone was kicking up a fuss when United pay whatever it was for Paul Pogba, an attacking midfielder. For another £10 million, Liverpool could have bought Southampton, I think. But then again, I thought they already had. It's just, I don't know, I think fans, we should stop getting hot under the collar about prices. The teams can afford it. The alternative is for the club owner to hoard the money for himself, like they do at Arsenal. What is that an alternative? My worry is that the last time Liverpool bought a player with a ponytail, it turned out to be a terrible decision. Where's he even wearing a ponytail? Andy Carroll, the bovine ponytail. £35 million, he's now stinking out West Ham along with the rest of West Ham. I like Van Dijk. I've seen him play a lot, and he looks a cultured defender. I think he will definitely improve Liverpool. The worry, of course, is that a lot of Southampton defenders
have looked great at St Mary's, and then when they've moved on, they've been useless. Diane Lovren, flop at Anfield, Luke Shaw, flop at Man United.
Yeah.
Everton got Cuco Martina on a free. They still feel robbed. And you just wonder whether, you know, there's something about Southampton that, you know, fits in well with them, and then they go somewhere else, they're all at sea. I don't know, but I like Van Dijk. I think he'll do well. The only worry I've got is that earlier this year he named Daniel Sturridge as his most difficult opponent, which suggests his choice of footballers is on a par with his choice of hairdressers. But I think he'll do well. 75 million is overpriced, but everybody's overpriced these days.
Yeah, it doesn't really.
On here.
I've got to disagree with that. I take exception to that, Derek. I don't think the cash matters anymore, does it, Craig? I mean, £75 million is a lot, but does it really make any difference how much they paid for him?
Dave, you've taken the words out of my mouth. You know what? The money is irrelevant these days. It's certainly with the top team, not with the teams I cover, Newcastle money definitely isn't irrelevant, but certainly with that top six, it's more about getting the player you want, getting the player you need, and being able to convince them to come to your football club. Now, the actual money element, while it is obscene and while £75 million is no doubt overpriced, if Virgil van Dijk comes in and does a job and improves Liverpool's defence and is the player they need to take them up into the top three, the top two, or even challenge Manchester City, then so be it. You look back and you think, you know what, the cost of Virgil van Dijk was ultimately academic. It's more about getting the right player. On the cost of it, though, I mean, I remember Gus Poyet, when he was still in Bossier, was watching Van Dijk, and I think the fee being quoted was somewhere between £5 and £10 million at the time, and they had a little bit of a concern about Van Dijk's pace. I mean, looking back now, it all seems a little bit stupid, doesn't it? I think Newcastle were watching them as well for a prolonged period, sending scouts up the parkhead. But no, for me, listen, the money is, it's not irrelevant, but it almost is irrelevant. If he comes in and adds something to Liverpool's team, then so be it. It's a good signing.
Just before you leave us, Craig, Newcastle versus Brighton is the game on the 30th. 11-10 Newcastle, draw 11-5, Brighton 3-1. Big game for Newcastle now, this one.
It is. It's absolutely huge. It really is. Those games against direct opponents, as we found out last week down at West Ham, just what that can do during the course of a 90 minutes, because on these apps now, you're following the live table, aren't you? And when West Ham go 1-0 up after 5 minutes through Marco Arnautovic, you see that the West Ham all of a sudden 5 points clear of Newcastle. Newcastle's in the relegation zone. Well, as it finishes on the day, Newcastle end up out the relegation zone and 1 point clear of West Ham, given that they managed to turn that around. So, no, it's another absolutely huge game against Brighton. Then they've got Stoke on New Year's Day as well. So I think they'll be looking at a minimum certainly of beating at least one of those opponents, if not perhaps taking a win and a draw as well. And that game down at West Ham, I think, would have done wonders for the confidence. But on the subject of prices, Dave, last time I was on here, do you remember I tipped up a 100-1 treble, three away teams, and it came in. So I'll give you three away teams for this weekend,
good.
For this Saturday. I'll give you Everton at Bournemouth. I'll give you Burnley at Huddersfield. And I'll give you Leicester at Liverpool. I don't know what price that pays, but those are the three ways to make you a rich man going into 2018.
Just short of 100-1, that treble. Looks good, that, Derek, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah, it does. It does. Leicester are overpriced, no doubt, 8-1. Burnley, a fantastic bet. Everton, I'm not too sure about. That could be the one that lets us down. But, you know, Craig's a man in form, so I might follow that.
Well, it's been a tough couple of weeks for me on the nap front, but hopefully now, just before the new year, I can begin to turn this around. Derby were okay, but let's be fair, didn't deserve victory over Hull on Boxing Day. But Leeds United certainly deserved victory over Burton, and that's where I'm going to go today. Leeds United to beat Birmingham City. Leeds, at the time of recording, 11-8. Birmingham City are in free fall. It has been a horrific season for them so far. Just one victory since the 13th of October, and that was over Forest, and it was fairly narrow as well. They're struggling to score goals. They didn't score against Fulham, didn't score against Norwich. Their draw against Sunderland and scoring against QPR may be not massively impressive. For Leeds United, well, things have turned round. They started well, dipped a little, but have picked themselves back up with four back-to-back victories, and they came from behind to beat Burton Albion with a three-minute double from Pablo Hernandez and Kamar Roof. For me, this is definitely my favourite bet, although I've had an awful lot of bets in the Championship this season that I've really liked. This would be up there. I think it is a brilliant odds-against shout, so I'm more than happy to take Leeds United as my nap of the week. Well, that's the Championship. Let's head to Gav Pushalowski for League One.
It's the final set of League One fixtures in 2017. Happy New Year to you all. Before we embark on the second half of the season next year, my nap for the final weekend of 2017 is routinely simple. It is a home side to win, odds against, and that side is Oldham Athletic at 13-10 to beat Bristol Rovers, who are 19-10. Bristol Rovers away from home, shocking. No other word to describe their form. 11 defeats in 15, and of their last 9 away games, they've failed to score in 6 of them. Normally, as a rule, you're at home to Bristol Rovers, score a goal, that could be enough to win the game. Oldham Athletic at home, their form is patchy. Defeat at home to Scunthorpe, victory against Rochdale, drawn against Wimbledon, wallop Northampton 5-1, lost last time at home to Fleetwood Town by 2-1. But the point with Oldham is they are always in the game. Against Fleetwood, they were on top until they went behind. Against Wimbledon, they absolutely dominated the game, just couldn't make the breakthrough. And when they do win at home, they score fives and score threes. Even in defeats, they can score twos. They are a competitive, keep-going side, Oldham. They don't give up, and I think they are going to be too strong for Bristol Rovers, and I'm backing Oldham to win at 13-10. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
So without being all Billy Big Boots, the standout result of League Two on Boxing Day was the Knapp. Luton winning 5-0 at Swindon, a result that leaves two questions. One, with Luton clear at the top of the table and away at Port Vale, should they really be odds against 21-20? Well, Vale are on a run. That's not the easiest fixture. And two, should Swindon really be a pick and price at home this weekend? 9 defeats in 15 home games, 7 out of 12 in the league. They are in the top half thanks to some great away results this season, but no team in League 2 have lost more league games on their own turf, and no team in the league is averaging 2 goals against at home this season except Swindon. I would worry about a bounce back win ordinarily, but Swindon are also in a rut of 6 defeats in 7, so fight not something I'm expecting to see. How bad have the visitors got to be for Swindon to be 13-8 and the visitors also to be 13-8? The answer is, according to the league table, only Luton are better. Second placed Notts County are in town, undefeated since mid-October in the league. That is a run of 10 games. There have been draws in there, though Swindon's run of 14 home games with just one draw suggests that won't happen here. Besides, one of County's draws was at Luton 2 games ago, which is a great result. And since then, they have gone to Morecambe and cantered to a 4-1 Boxing Day win without Shola Amiobi, Jonathan Ford and Rob Milsom, who could all be back now. The short version is, there is no way the two sides deserve the same pricing. There have been overs on the goals in 9 of Swindon's last 11, 46 in total in that time. That is over 4 per game. Both teams to score has landed in 10 of the last 11 Notts County games, so County and over 2.5 goals at 3-1 is way too big. But the Knapp, as always, is the outright. That is Notts County at 13-8.
Thank you, Al, and thank you to everyone that's contributed to this podcast this week. That is your lot. Do check out all the betting at sports.williamhill.com. Good luck if you're having a bet this week, and remember to check us out at the usual podcast places. If you're listening on audioboom.com, just type in The Punt to get this podcast delivered weekly, and the same applies to iTunes. All the latest offers on the William Hill website as well. Enhanced odds for all the TV games in the Premier League, and those are all hashtag your odds as well. So if you want your bet on the William Hill website or on the app, make sure you tweet using the hashtag YourOdds to @WilliamHill. Good luck if you're having a bet this week, and we'll speak again on this podcast in the very near future.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.